For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome. For new people, I'm Taigen Layton, the teacher here at Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, and I'm very happy to have giving the talk tonight Kathy Bingham, who's a founding member of Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, and also a former board member, and now again a new board member. So thank you very much, Kathy.
Thank you all for listening. It is a humbling experience to be asked to do a Dharma talk to this group. So I want to say that I put together some ideas of things that I've been thinking about, and I connected that to some teachings that I think relate and address it, then I would like to have some discussion around that. So and the topic is reflections on impermanence, permanence and impermanence, and emptiness. I'm starting out with just commenting that in the last couple of years, and it's just been a couple of years, I've become more aware of how old I am. I think for years I was pretty oblivious to this. But there are a variety of reasons. You know, one is my hair color, and so when I'm in a group of people, people will acknowledge it as a sign of respect, you know, ask me if I would like to have a seat or if they can help me, and I appreciate that, and actually have needed it a couple times when it was a very long ride on the L and I had a lot to carry. There have been minor health issues that I have to monitor that I am told are come with age. I have family and friends who are my age and older who are making totally different life decisions now. They've retired. There's some of them moving to the south or to warmer climates. I have recently got a new doctor because my doctor retired. And this young new doctor, one of the first questions in the first session was, we need the name for a power of attorney. So it's like the realities of needing to be planful. I needed to, you know, I make a decision. I haven't yet signed up for Social Security. I have signed up for Medicare. These are things that you don't have a choice. You've got to do it at a certain timing. You know, a financial consultant asked me literally, no joke, how long do you plan to live? And so, you know, it's kind of like, it's very frustrating. So those are the kinds of things that have brought my attention to this. You know, I could live to be in my 90s or I could die tomorrow. It's also interesting how you perceive time differently at different parts of your life. For example, I remember in my early 20s, I couldn't wait to be 25 and then 29 because those were ages I thought were sophisticated. And I wasn't there yet. And then I remember a time in my 40s when things were a bit of a struggle, when I, you know, felt like life is a bit of an uphill battle and I've got a long way to go and I better get the rhythm of this thing. You know, so that was a totally different kind of feeling. And that's one of the things I think that drove me to a spiritual practice, at which time I got involved in Tai Chi and then Taoist classes and Taoist meditation, later into Buddhist meditation and yoga, which has become more important over the years. But all of this being said, this new focus, you know, that you have to be aware of your age when you get to be a certain age, you know, life also seems a little more carefree now. And something has happened, and I see it in my same age peers as well. Letting go, letting your mind wander, allowing yourself to do what you feel like more often. And this is welcome to me. And am I speaking loud enough? It's welcome to me in a contrast to what has been much of my life, which has been more task-oriented. I've tended to be analytical, striving, reviewing a sequence of events, tasks that need to occur each day. You know, first I need to do this, and then I need to do that. And I can still be in that mode very much on work days, because I'm still working and plan to for some time. It's interesting that I find it difficult to fit in yoga or meditation on work days. I find it much easier to do those practices on days off. There's something about having difficulty combining or breaking into the pattern. But I am doing more of the carefree stuff now than I used to. I find myself yearning for time to be creative, to do projects I want to do that I've put off for a long time, to take art classes, to get back to playing the piano, having time for a pet again, working on the yard, or hiking or biking in new places, exploration. These are all things that make me feel lighter and more connected to my world, at peace. So getting older is connected to these feelings, partly because I don't care as much anymore. And it's like it's easier to not care or to lay down that continual attention than it used to be. So I'm letting go more of the things that take drive, like career building. I have less drive for new career challenges in the past few years. And yet, at the same time, I really value my career and am appreciative of feeling more secure and confident in it now than I ever have before. So how does all of this relate to impermanence? So this talk is very much from an experiential perspective. I'm not a teaching on the meaning of this profound and mysterious concept. But my mind goes there a little more often than it did in the past. And one specific event this fall crystallized some of these feelings. 2 years ago, I moved to a house that had a beautiful 80 to 100-year-old, we're not sure, silver maple in the backyard. And you can imagine how big it was to have lived that long. It was huge. I sort of fell in love with the house because of this huge old tree, which was home to many squirrels, birds, and other animals. I would enjoy sitting on my back porch and watch the tree leaves blowing and the birds hopping from branch to branch. I was told that this tree was like a weed tree. I am beside a woods, and 80 to 100 years ago, there were so many trees in the area that some trees, especially silver maples, sprung up like weeds. Many of these must have been cut down when houses were built 80 or so years ago. This one was left and stood much, much higher than any other tree in the neighborhood. You could see the top branches from a few blocks away. The trunk was 54 inches in diameter, just to give you an idea. There was something ageless about the tree. comforting to think that it was alive for longer than I was and during my parents' lives, comforting to think of it as a kind of it as being in a stand of trees at one time. The tree symbolized the wisdom of age to me. It had the ability to survive many changes in the immediate and broader environment over the years. Then after getting consultation for 2 years, I realized the tree needed to come down for safety reasons. A fungus had invaded it, and the vascular system was badly compromised. So the day after Thanksgiving, it came down. As it came down, it was evident that from hollow branches that it would not be safe in high winds or ice storms. So it was needed. It needed to come down. Watching the tree come down was an emotional event for me. It took 4 skilled men who were working very collaboratively all day to take it down, and one of them was slightly injured in the process. Anyway, it was no small task to take this tree down. So this brought my attention to impermanence. One tree standing 80 to 100 years, witnessing lots of different animals, birds, families, and cars in the alley come and go. My initial reaction was grief, sadness, and feeling empty. And 2 neighbors said to me, "Your backyard is so empty." Then gradually I turned to focusing on planting a new tree in the spring, and my mind moved to considering how long various trees, bushes, animals live. What is their cycle? Thinking of the way plants, animals, trees interact in their cycles of procreation and propagation. I sometimes have parallel thoughts about the human race, consideration of its history and what I've witnessed in my lifetime close up, trying to understand specific trends, trying to make sense, looking for answers, and then stepping back for a more distant view to think of the changes in the human condition over a span of centuries. I've been doing more letting go in my urgency to comprehend, seeing myself as that silver maple, as being here and serving a function, living my life cooperatively, intertwining with others, being part of the world, part of a community for a period of years, and then cut down when the body no longer functions or a fungus takes hold. So sometimes very engaged in problem solving, figuring what I can do that is productive, sometimes, you know, as well as following news, following what's going on in the world. At other times, letting go and recognizing what I don't have control over and enjoying living more in the moment. A poem that was shared by a friend at New Year's helps in finding some integration between these 2 modes of thought, especially as it pertains to natural resources. The title of the poem is Natural Resources, and it's written by Adrian Rich. My heart is moved by all I cannot save. So much has been destroyed. I have to cast my lot with those who age after age, perversely, with no extraordinary power, reconstitute the world. So there's some mystery about that, and there's some letting go in that. And it makes me think of moss. So how do I address these dual feelings? I feel like I'm influenced and have an ongoing relationship with all of the religious traditions I have participated in during my lifetime. I grew up in the Christian tradition, and I still resonate with Jesus's teachings of compassion. I attended a Unitarian Universalist church for 10 years and appreciate their focus on social awareness and action and inclusivity of different religions and in general. I studied Taoism and practiced that for 10 years and appreciate the focus on energy, emptiness, and mysterious ways to get at profound truths. Buddhism, I still find meaningful. I find it a little more intellectual with koans to tickle your brain. And sometimes I think I toggle back and forth between Buddhism and Taoism, reflection and energy. Yoga, and use them both, not like one or the other, but they're both. Yoga is another important spiritual practice for me in my life, and it's a meditative movement that has been very useful to me. It has to do with being in the moment, starting where you are, pushing yourself in manageable ways, learning age-old sequences, as well as making up movements or sequences that fit you and work for you personally. Connecting to something bigger than yourself and energy and age-old practice. Zazen and yoga both help with this and are part of one and the same practice, I think. I want to have time for discussion in a little bit, but I have three readings that are pertinent to permanence and impermanence. And they pull from different traditions. And so the first one I want to read comes from Hilary Richards, and she did a reflection in the book The Hidden Lamp, which is a group of Buddhist women teachers. And I'm not going to read the entire essay that she wrote, but I am going to read a part of it, and we can come back in a minute to discuss it. The title of her chapter is Permanence and Impermanence. A grieving woman said to Chan Master John Crook, can't pronounce his name, "Master, truly, presence is impermanent, but absence is permanent." "Indeed so," he replied. What did the woman understand? Shall I read that again? A grieving woman said to Chan Master John Crook, "Master, truly, presence is impermanent, but absence is permanent." "Indeed so," he replied. What did the woman understand? Just going to read a couple different parts of her commentary. She refers to the teacher, Master John Crook's teachings. Tell us emptiness is the impermanence of everything, but emptiness is also form becoming empty as part of the universal process of change. Our attachment to form, which causes us to experience love and loss, is both noble and grievous. In her grief, the woman may have come to a heartfelt understanding of how love and death express precisely the natural wholeness of the universe. If we are able to let go of our logical minds, our hearts can respond to the universe in an extraordinary way. This opens us to the insights of the teachings and allows us to take refuge in the three jewels, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And when we take refuge, we are on the path. We appreciate suffering and can learn to transform it with wisdom and compassion. So hold on to that thought for a minute. I can reread part of that. I want to now pull from Xuanzi, who is a Taoist master, and is someone I especially like to read. It's on a similar topic, approached in a slightly different way. When Lao Tzu died, modest ease, that's the name of a person, modest ease went in to mourn for him. He shouted three times, then left. A disciple asked, "You were the master's friend, weren't you?" "Yes." "Then is it acceptable for you to mourn like that?" "Yes," replied modest ease. "At first I took that to be him in there," meaning that Lao Tzu was not the same dead as alive. "But then I saw that it wasn't him at all. When I went in to mourn, there were parents mourning as if they were mourning their own children, and there were children mourning as if they were mourning their own mothers. All these people gathered around his teachings, and isn't it because they don't speak when they speak, don't mourn when they mourn? This is to hide from heaven, to turn against the actual and forget that it's all given to us. The ancients called this the crime of hiding from heaven. The master came in time with his own season and then followed it away. If you're at peace with such seasons, if you're at home following them, then sorrow and joy can never touch you. The ancients called this getting free of the gods." And then the closing statement, "The firewood we can point to is consumed. That's how the flame passes on. And who knows where it all ends?" That's my favorite part, actually. I think I won't go on to read another one, maybe, but to have some discussion on these two. Any reactions to this one I just read? Thoughts or comments in general?
So please, any comments, questions, responses to any of what Kathy has offered us?
But she was all the wood.
They took it away. It was a big enough deal. These things, there was no way I could do it. They were so heavy. It's like I couldn't have picked one up.
It was a beautiful tree. I've never seen that.
It was a beautiful tree. Yeah, I'm sure that they did something with it, sold it, but I didn't attempt to do anything with the wood. I've been told I'm going to get a couple of short stumps back to use to put planters on.
Mm-hmm. So we had a 100-year-old elm tree back in the Shaolin, went through the same process of watching. Bringing down and the transformation of three different yards, and it reached out. So we're describing it like that. And when you said getting the stumps back, we got some stumps, and they became inhabited by paper wasps.
Oh.
Who ate out the inside of the stumps. So even the remnant that we may think is permanent
is not.
And then that, to me, connected with that last piece that you said.
Firewood.
The
firewood we can point to is consumed. That's how the flame passes on, and who knows where it all ends.
And it's like I can still see that tree. We don't live in a house anymore. The former neighbor has passed away, and like all these changes. So there is very much this kind of sense of presences, impermanence, and absences.
It's part of the physical world, you know. We see it, and we share it, you know, like as multiple people in the neighborhood. Something that's that large.
When birds came back the next year to try and nest.
Oh, what did they do?
They were flying around trying to figure out what.
Yeah, yeah. No, that is sad.
Yeah, I remember seeing it.
Well, that allows me, you know, when I think of nature, it allows me to think about the sequence, the cycle. The fact that this was a weed tree and sprung up, you know, from other trees around it, and eventually succumbed to fungus, maybe because it got isolated, because I was told that some silver maples live to be 250 years old in the right conditions. But, you know, in terms of these readings, there seems to be a theme of how to deal with impermanence, and that there's something about it being not so much something you understand, but something you feel, or like an intuitive sort of reaction. Like with the Taoist piece, it's like that he came in and saw it was not Lao Tzu, you know, the dead person. It was kind of like, okay, he's dead. He's not there anymore. And he shouted, and it sounds like it was the startle. And then it contrasted it to other people who were mourning as if their own children had died. And so I think he's getting at, we get caught in the emotion, but there's something about an acceptance that he's coaching us toward that has to do with letting go and being part of the bigger picture, being part of the larger cycle ourselves, you know? So as the trees that come down, or the... and while we can't see how the next step is, that we are part of that energy too. And so, you know, when I think of, you know, it's interesting because when I was studying Taoism, there was so much of it that seemed just totally mysterious, which was, it drew me, but it was frustrating. But that because they're dealing more with an energetic level, and they're talking about the energy you have inside and how it's connected to the universe, that there's a universal energy, that there is something about being part of that, and about, you know, when people die, they go back into that in some way. People are born out of that, so that there's an energy in the same way that it's easy to see the cycle of a tree, you know, dropping seeds and planting new trees and cycles going. You know, that one is easier for me to envision. In the Taoist way of thinking about it, you almost think of it the same way in an energetic sense, that there's a cycle happening. And I don't think that that's necessarily different than in Buddhism, but it's expressed in a different way. And I think, you know, one of the things she was getting at in the talking about permanence and impermanence is emptiness is the impermanence of everything. But she's also getting at exploration of the heart, which is not logical. Our attachment to form, which causes us to experience love and loss, is both noble and grievous. In her grief, the woman may have come to a heartfelt understanding of how life and death express precisely the natural wholeness of the universe. If we are able to let go of our logical minds, our hearts can respond to the universe in an extraordinary way. So I think, you know, there's like an exhortation to get out of our heads and get into our hearts. But also there's something about a trust here of being something larger, more universal.
When you were speaking of letting go of the tree of Lhasa, I was struck by that, by how you talked about your own letting go of ambition or career building and mm-hmm. as you mature. And,
Yeah, I think that's right, because it moves me into a more responding to what I feel like doing, responding more in the moment to things around me, being less of a driving force, being able to be more responsive back and forth. Did you have a comment?
Oh, I was just thinking about another tree that came down there that like just a thin slice of it was in the garden. Mm-hmm. And it's like it one day beautiful mushrooms that you would normally just not even notice. So, you know, there's the one stump that the paper wasps come in and consume, and there's another one that creates this beautiful little mushroom. So, and then I was thinking of the firewood becomes ash, and ash does not become firewood.
That's okay. It's the Xuanzi one.
It was a Dogen Genjo Koan.
Oh, the Jingo Genjo Koan.
And so thinking, you know, you can't have the tree back without the tree dying and that piece resting in that particular spot. Those little tiny beautiful mushrooms wouldn't appear.
Yeah. That you don't know what you might create, or where your life might take you, or what you might get involved in, because you're letting go of a different way of being, and so it leaves you open. Yeah, and so it's I'm looking forward to having more of that.
Yes.
When there's four names on our altar today, I am grappling with being old, but one of the names on our altar, Craig Stettner, who, as Tagen mentioned, was a friend of mine, was only 50 years old and strong and healthy and drowned in the ocean on Christmas Day.
Oh.
For absolutely no reason.
Yeah.
Random wave or something.
Yeah.
And that's a different kind of impermanence with a different kind of acceptance.
Yes.
Needed. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing to have the gift of growing old and understanding all this whole life and eventually begun, but that doesn't happen to everyone.
Right, right.
I guess it's important for us all in this room, no matter what our age is, to hear and think about impermanence, because it intensifies our understanding of the preciousness of every second and the, you know, the real possibility that
right.
It could go away anytime.
Yes.
It's daunting.
Yeah. It is. It is. I agree with you. And that's young, and it's so fluky that we don't know when that might happen. Yeah, I went to my 50th high school reunion this past September, and there were four people that lived in the small town where I grew up who had died, some 10 years ago, and I was so sad. One of them, I thought, was making such a contribution to the world, and it was like, why did he have to die early? So there's no rhyme or reason always.
Right, there's no rhyme or reason, even though our brain wants to make there be a rhyme or reason.
Right, even though we want there to be. Yeah.
I'm wondering if you thought through that space before a death or an ending that you know is coming. So in your case with the tree, the days where it was standing but wasn't yet there, it seems like, I don't know, I'm currently like going through a process of like pre-grieving a patient that I'm close with that's going to die at a younger age than 23. And there's something about that, it seems closer to understanding Orma's emptiness than the actual death. Like, the death seems like the easy part to me.
Yeah.
I don't know if you thought through that.
You mean the anticipation,
yeah,
the seeing it coming.
Or like, it also reminds me of reading Jen Didion's Blue Nights, and I don't know if anybody's read this, but it's about her kind of like, it's her final piece of work, and she's contemplating, you know, the end of being herself. And I think I struggle more with that than something that is
I think even when it happens at a young age, there's a review of one's life. You know, when you know it's coming, not when it's an accident, but when you know it's coming, I think typically there is some kind of review or reflection, and maybe some thoughts of what you thought it was going to be, and coming to terms with how do you make sense then of this, or how do you value what your life has meant.
Or is in the moment. Because it's still existing. I think I'm really like, I'm struggling through that when like the existing is only the anticipation of not being.
No, that's the topic.
It's very wonderful and enriching that actually in our song we have so many people who are doing chaplain or hospice worker training. And it's a reminder for all of us, as you're saying, to appreciate the difference at each moment. sort of out of time tonight. So,
okay.
But we do have time to do our closing chant at 4:47.